Anywho, it's Dan again with his half-ass harmonica playing and other monstrosities of creation and whatnot. He just drank some water. I don't want to edit that out, so if you heard some slurping noise, that was just me drinking some water. Like, that fucking matters. It is still December the 20th, 2018. This is some kind of Little Saigon report, I suppose. My last podcast dealt with this whole deception lie thing, and I know that's a common theme with me. It is existentially a powerful theme with me. It hasn't always been this way. There was a time when I could suspend disbelief, where I could believe things. Like, for example, when I swore an oath to be an officer in the military, I believed I was swearing an oath to a free republic. So I actually believed that when I took the oath to defend the Constitution from all enemies, foreign or domestic, and the other officers with me did the same, that they would actually do that. So, for example, if you had a few presidents, not just Obama, not just Trump, not just Bush, but if you had a couple, two, three presidents who've basically been tyrants, you would have a moral obligation to act. I once believed that people took that oath seriously. I no longer believe that. I actually once believed in the Federal Reserve. It's so freaking demonic and evil. I once bought into their bullshit. I took the economics courses in college. I read the proper magazines. You know, sometimes you got to stimulate, and there's nothing like controlling the money supply, blah, blah, blah. I sort of still believed their bullshit up until 2008. And then after 2008, I did my own research and I realized the mountains of bullshit, the mountains of deception that the Federal Reserve exists upon is supported by. Its very creation, the creation of the Federal Reserve and the income tax, is a cloudy, opaque subject that we dare not talk about or revisit. But I can't think of any more interesting beginning of a demonic century than that. It really did become a demonic century with the existence of the income tax and the Federal Reserve. You had the ability to do things like fund terrible wars and say, well, we'll just put it on the credit card. We'll fight this terrible war and we'll murder lots of people, but we'll just put it on the credit card. We're going to drop bombs on people and irradiate them, but we'll put it on the credit card. You know, barring the Federal Reserve, we probably couldn't have put all that shit on the credit card. And then when Nixon closed the gold window, it was like, yeah, we're not going to pay back the credit card. So I used to believe things that I now know to be nonsense. I used to believe in the concept of limited government. My entire political life, starting from the beginning, I would have called myself almost small government Republican, right? I mean, that's what we would have said back in the day when, you know, when Reagan was in office. I believe in small government. You know, George Will, he's a smart guy. You know, he calls himself a libertarian Republican. Wow, that sounds really sophisticated. I'm going to call myself that. I used to believe that bullshit. I actually honestly believed that the Republican Party represented small government. Now, as I got older, and as I suppose the layers of confusion were removed, I began to realize that was bullshit too. I would have to say my first great awakening happened when I was in the service, and I wasn't even in combat. It was just the terrible, disgusting things I saw in active duty that seemed to violate, you know, don't lie, don't cheat, don't steal, don't be dishonorable. I saw so many acts of dishonor, and the only moral principle that I could glean from my limited time on active duty was that the only thing that is right to do is to obey. Like, that was essentially the main message. Whatever I was taught in war and society, you know, jus ad bellum, jus in bello, all the moral war theory, all of the ethics, all of the stuff you get at officer basic course about principles in the military, right and wrong, it took about a month or two on active duty to see that that was all just patent nonsense, total bullshit. And the thing is, you'd have NCOs at Officer Basic Course who would wink and they'd nod about the truth. But then you're thinking, well, they're just being salty and cynical, and it can't be that bad. It can't be as bad. You know, I had one NCO tell me, he said, Dan, if you want to be in the Army, you should spend a year in Korea. And I said, well, you know, okay, I'll do that. Because at the time, there was no war on terror. You know, we're still a couple years shy of that. So there was really no action. I mean, there was some kind of weirdness going on in the Balkans, but fucking nobody really thought too deeply about that and Serbia and whatnot. So there was Korea, and Korea was kind of a mess. And I guess he figured, you know, spend a year in a mess and figure out if you want to stay in the Army. I actually had my orders changed. I was supposed to go to the 101st, which is neither here nor there. But I had them changed to go to the, you know, go to 2nd ID, 2nd Infantry Division, you know, Korea. And I mentioned this because while on active duty, I saw things that almost seem prosaic and just ridiculously naive by today's standards because of the horrors we all know of. But at the time, they seemed really gross, you know, the things that people thought were okay, like lying about status, you know, lying about the status of your unit in a part of the world where you could be in a combat zone within minutes, you know, where essentially what we were told about the situation with North Korea, which has essentially been true since 1953, is it's, you know, an armistice, it's not a peace, and yeah, things happen all the time. Things did. So you'd think people would take things like status seriously, but they really didn't. And that's just a minor example of the grossness. So yeah, you go through this process and you realize so many of the things you told were lies. And then I think you also make bargains. I know that when I fell in love, I made bargains with myself. I said, I'm going to be a little bit deceptive to myself and maybe to others because I want to make this work. And the fact is, when I left the service, I was almost an anarchist at the time. I kind of drifted towards Chomsky's sort of quasi-socialistic small-scale anarchism, but that was probably leftovers from being in the Army. You know, you get used to a kind of socialism in the military. But no, I was almost an anarchist in the real sense. And then I fell in love, and then I was like, you know, maybe you know, there's this third way. And I never really did find the third way. I kind of screwed that all up. But what I will say is this, is that love's probably not a great excuse for deluding yourself, but it isn't the worst excuse. I think that for the most part, 2008 did the trick. After 2008, it was just fait accompli. At some point, I would lose total faith in the system. But here's the thing about faith in the system, and here's the thing, and this is kind of the point of the podcast. I don't care what the mythology is or the illusion is. It seems to me that we're reaching a point in American history where it really is this simple. You either obey or you die. I recently had an interaction with an Amazon technical recruiter, and I don't care to say his name because I just don't give a shit. And I was kind of rude to him because, frankly, I've gotten kind of sick of technical recruiters. They can be really conniving motherfuckers, and I have been gaslighted by more than one of these assholes just since I've moved back to Washington State, but it's everywhere. It's this bad. I mean, every once in a while you'll meet one of these people. Okay, this person might be decent, but for the most part, they're pimps on their own scale of pimpery, and they're fuckheads. So I was having this interaction with an Amazon technical recruiter over this software job, blah, blah, blah. Whether it really existed or not is a big question mark. And I got kind of rude, and I told him about the rebar and where he could put it and how I felt. And he said, you know, that, you know, and I forget what he said exactly. It was like something like, you know, it's really going to be hard for you in the future or something. Like, you know, things are just going to get worse for you, buddy. And it's like, you know, I don't know where he's coming from about the future and things getting worse. I know they can get worse. I mean, I'm at the point now where I either am willing to stomach the bullshit of writing code in King County, Washington, where for the most part, unless you're really lucky, you're going to end up in some kind of politically correct snake pit of bullshit. And that's if you're really fucking lucky. But you might end up in a place that's kind of hostile where being, and I'll be blunt, being a white, old white dude, is about the worst fucking person to be, demographically speaking. And yeah, it kind of sucks. And you basically get a lot of shit. And so if I can stomach that, then I can pay for rent and I can avoid being homeless and I can avoid dying. Now, keep in mind, I'm almost 50. So as far as the whole probability model of human existence goes, I can't really say that the branch and sequence label, you know, go through more undignified experiences, Dan, is such a wonderful path. It might be. It might also be shit. Truly, at moments like this, the thing that keeps me tethered is my faith. And this is the difference between me today and me maybe 8 years ago. Is that 8 years ago, if I'd reached a point like this, and I was pretty close at certain points, I probably would have said, that, you know, what is the point? I mean, why would you want to be a middle-aged white male in 2018 in a society, in a world where basically, best case scenario, you're more or less someone who's confused about what's true, and everyone's going to tell you that you're guilty of great crimes? You know, I don't know what I know about slavery. I know about what happened to Native Americans. I think that they're both despicable. And yet, by the same token, I am responsible for those things. At some point, you know, the whole patriarchy bullshit gets to be ridiculous. And you say to yourself, why? Why participate? So this technical recruiter inadvertently was telling the truth. You know, the thing about deception, as I've stated many times before, lies are not 100% falsehoods. Lies that are 100% falsehoods generally just don't work that well. They tend to be ridiculously easy to figure out. You know, it's almost as bad as the dog ate my homework. They're not, you know, that's a good example on the, you know, percentage of truth scale of having almost none. So lies that typically function have some truth to them. And whether this technical recruiter was just pissed off and being silly or telling me the truth, their truth was there. You know, for a person like me, when I look at the future, I see something that looks like THX 1138, something that looks really controlled, really scripted, really walk between the lines, really freaking dystopian with respect to the truth. So, you know, I'll constantly be being told things are great when every part of me tells me things are shitty, and vice versa, probably. I mean, that's how these experiments work. This is how they control people, and this is how they break people. But this is the future will be obey or perish. That's it. They won't say it that way. In fact, they'll use a lot of innuendo and a lot of euphemisms. It's kind of like, you know, Bill Gates' little slogan for one of his projects, innovate to zero. You know, that's okay. One way to innovate to zero is to build nukes and blow everybody up. And then you have, you know, you've innovated to zero. So innovating to zero doesn't really tell me very much, but it is kind of a dark, kind of creepy thing to fucking say. So even though they won't come out and say obey or perish, obey or starve, that is the future we're looking at. We are looking at a future like that. I'll give you an example. I don't think any person should feel obligated to have either a mobile phone or any phone at all, unless they have a job that requires it. And if a job requires it, I think the job should pay for it. So guess what? If you really do need somebody to be on call 24/7, then you should pay for the phone, and rightly so. Then you can control the software that goes on it. Actually, from a security perspective, it makes way more fucking sense for companies to issue a mobile device that is to be used only for work than to have people using their own devices. But the world we live in now, if you don't have a mobile phone or any kind of phone, your own private phone, you really can't get a job. Now, you say to yourself, well, Dan, that's just the way things are. Is it really? I mean, do things actually have to be like that? I'm undergoing an experiment right now. I don't currently have the money to pay for a phone, so I have no phone. And so I'm basically conducting an experiment, and it's got only about another month left. And that is, can I find some kind of work without a phone? I might be able to find something, but, you know, I don't think so. It's not very likely. So we're already at the point where if you're not a person who is voluntarily put a dog collar on, which means purchased a mobile device and is wearing it in a pocket somewhere all the time. If you're not already doing that, then you're kind of not in the system. And if you're not in the system, you don't get to eat. It may not seem that simple, but it's almost there. You will be in the system with some type of mobile device. You will be staring at some kind of screen, statistically speaking, for some percentage of the day. If you don't do these things, then you're not going to eat. It is obey or perish. It is obey or starve. And that's the crux of it, is that even if you recognize this as being evil, and even if you say to yourself, well, you know, I pray and I'll read the Bible and I'll try to seek fellowship, and that all sounds fucking great. And it's not that I don't believe it. I do. I have faith. I believe. But I also, you know, if you read the Bible, you realize it's a bit more sophisticated than anyone wants to admit. And it isn't, it's got a lot more unhappy endings than happy endings. There are very few happy endings in the Bible. I hate to break it to you, but there's a lot of tragedy, okay? A lot of pain, a lot of suffering, a lot of hubris, a lot of human beings having a reach that exceeds their grasp. But there really aren't that many happy endings. I mean, unless you want to say, okay, the you know, this may be a half empty, half full thing, but sort of like the Great Flood. I mean, you could say, well, but Noah was saved. That's true. The entire world was washed away. So yes, that's a kind of happy ending, but that's what the best you're going to get in the Bible, really, for the most part, is, well, luckily he didn't die, you know, in the fiery furnace. Well, that's great news. That's great news on the scale of things to be happy about. You know, it isn't like getting a free Ferrari, but hey, at least I didn't die being burned alive. So that is the dark, scary future if we're kind of tearing this thing apart and putting it back together again. A future where you will either obey an authority that is definitely not God, or you will cease to exist. And yeah, we may not be there yet. It's still not quite that bad. You know, I venture to guess that there'll be some way I'll eke out an existence for a year or two more, maybe 10 more years, I don't know. But I look into the future and I look at where young people are today, especially when it comes to obedience. It's like for them, listen, I either obey or I don't have a job. I either obey, I don't fall in love on Snapchat or fucking Tinder, and I don't get the girl or the guy, and I end up dying alone, and I'm not popular, and I don't get liked on Facebook. Fuck, fuck, fuck. They have so programmed younger people that for the most part, they will simply obey. They don't want to die. Why would you want to die? If the choice is between your dignity and your liberty, you know, or your life, they'll choose their life. And frankly, as far as the X generation goes, my generation, fuck. They're so sold out. And it's probably why there's so much depression, because if you actually have a soul of any sort and you realize you sold out, all you can do is look around at the decay and say, what the fuck? It's gross. What happened was gross, and you were partially responsible. Congratulations. And I take some of the responsibility too. I believed the lie for too long. That is the scary proposition of this podcast, of this conversation, is if you're faced with a question, obey the system or die, what do you do? And if obedience becomes less of a tangled line between paying taxes and people being murdered in some far off country, but if obedience reaches a point where the line is more direct and you can see that obedience is harming your neighbor and harming people you know, but you also know to disobey means to die, which do you choose? Now, if you're a good Christian, you'll say, well, I'm saved in the Lord, and so my life is eternal. This physical life, I'll do the best I can, but if the choice is, you know, be true to the Lord or die, you know, I'm going to be, you know, or, you know, be true to the Lord and die, or basically, you know, you know, yeah. So if the choice is be true to the Lord, but put your life at risk, I'm sure they'd say, I'm going to be true to the Lord. That's my assumption with a good Christian. But for a lot of people, it's going to be a terribly difficult question. For me, it kind of is, because it's never binary. Like, at some point, it's going to be less subtle, but even now, it feels like I either obey the system or I slowly dwindle away. And I'm not sure that I'm alone. I think that there are probably a lot of middle-aged, men and women both, irrespective of race or ethnicity. I'm sure there are a lot of people, in the quote-unquote former middle class American dream cult who look at the world today to themselves and say, I either go along with this shit or I'll be dead soon. I don't think I'm alone in this. It may not just be people in their 40s and 50s. It could be a lot of millennials too, say to them, who are awake enough to realize that they're either going to go along with it or they will perish. They will not have a job. They will not have anything remotely resembling a kind of acceptable existence. And I'm not even saying their life will be that good, but they won't even get the shitty life that they feel that they've grown accustomed to. They won't even get their credit card bullshit reality. They won't even get that. They either obey or they die. Obedience or death. And I think I've repeated that enough, so I'm going to leave you guys with this. This is two podcasts in a day. I don't know what that means. I don't know. There is hope and possibility in life. That is 100% true. But what life is there in a prison camp?